Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Dev to Dev, the podcast about everyday video game developers and why they do what they do every day. I'm Alex Salmon here again, ready for another good conversation with a friend and ex-colleague, Matt. Matt, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. My name is Matt Brunhofer. I've been in game development for about 7 years. I've worked in quality assurance and production across Square Enix and ZeniMax Online Studios, mainly on Dissidia Final Fantasy NT, as well as The Elder Scrolls Online, and then the unannounced MMO project that was recently shelved at ZeniMax Online Studios.
Yes, unfortunately, the one that got away.
It got away, man.
It certainly did for many of us. Thanks for taking the time. Excited to dig into your history, who you are as a person, who you are as a developer. I'd like to kick this off with my favorite question. What first inspired you about video games?
Oof. I think the inspiration really just came from my experience in the entertainment industry, because I, from a young age, I never really thought about doing, like, being a developer of video games. It was always kind of that untouchable thing, that untouchable job, that really cool job I would never do. But from a very young age, I knew I wanted to work in the entertainment industry, whatever that might be. But my heart originally was set on filmmaking. I was really, you know, really into movies, really into understanding story, understanding character development, character arcs, all that stuff. And so for the longest time, it was all about filmmaking. I mean, from before high school, where then I joined like the TV production program and all that, really started getting my hands on cameras, making my own things. That really started introducing me to the entertainment industry. And then I eventually got into the theater department as well. I played football for about my first 3 years of high school. I was never very good at it. I was always getting hurt. I mean, like, really bad injuries. Mm. And I was never really in love with it. I did it to, like, lose weight, because I was always the big kid. It was just one of those things. But then as soon as I started doing the theater department, because my dad, he kind of told me, you know, if you want to do filmmaking, you know, a lot of the majors that are kind of around the schools in the state, which I'm from Virginia, they don't really have true filmmaking film schools, you know. At that time, they didn't really, you know, and I wasn't about to go to California or New York or anything like that. So doing research, it was like, if you want to get into like a film program in Virginia, you really need to be part of the theater department. So fell in love with the theater department in high school, and then I went to college for filmmaking, theater and dance, with emphasis in digital filmmaking was my full major. So I did that, and I learned everything about theater, everything about filmmaking. I became a really good lighting tech in theater. Like, I loved running cables and setting up lights and focusing lights and all that stuff. And then from there, I graduated college with not really much of a direction. Like, I knew I still wanted to work in theater, but a lot of the theater places in New York and Washington, D.C. and everything, you had to have a resume. And I didn't have anything. There weren't any internships, so I actually went to school to be a medic, an EMT, for a little while, and I actually became an EMT. And then right when I got my certification and started a job as an EMT, I got an internship at a theater. So I basically became that theater's intern as well as the EMT, because, you know, you always need a medic on hand at a theater for various things. And so from there, I did theater there for about a year and a half, and I decided, like, I really wanted to get back into film. Really did. I loved my time at theater. I did a whole bunch of shows. If anybody's ever in Fredericksburg, Virginia, look up Riverside Performance Center, or Center of Performing Arts, I think it's called now. Go see a show. It's always great. But I really wanted to get back into film, and I think I kind of fell out of love with kind of directing, because as a medic, I was actually able to get a job for a day on set of a legit Hollywood television series. They're filming the pilot in Norfolk, Virginia, and I was able to be a medic for a day, and I'm not gonna lie, I was bored. Like, I was, like, watching the process, I'm like, man, I thought it was different, like, on a very professional level. Like, doing all my short films, always a good time, great, had fun with friends, but then, like, when it's on the very professional Hollywood budget level, where everything is to a T and everything is organized to a T, like, I was just sitting there like, man, I would much prefer just to write the thing and then somebody else goes and makes it. And that's exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to become a writer. So I went back to school for writing. and I got my master's in creative writing from Full Sail University, which is great. And then after I got that, I did the whole move out to LA and try to make it type of deal, and slept on a friend's floor in a warehouse a block away from Skid Row.
Mm-hmm.
Type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to make it. I started working for a children's theater company out there where we toured around all of LA, got to work with a whole bunch of great kids, a whole bunch of great schools. And in the meantime, I was writing. I was working on spec scripts. I worked with a theater called Theater Unleashed and wrote a couple things for them. And then I finally landed an internship at a legit studio. But it wasn't paying, and I needed something that paid, and I just said to myself, hey, video games, I've always loved video games, I played them, I should try this. And I looked up Square Enix, and they had a job opening for a contract QA tester, and I applied. I didn't think I was going to get it. I got it, and then from there, like, as soon as I went through the interview and saw I think the office kind of sold me, like, you go up mm-hmm. there, it's all official, like, Square Enix. Mm-hmm. It's got a whole bunch of Final Fantasy figurines and like glass cases and stuff like that. Like it's great. But then sitting down and talking to the people, and I realized like, oh, these people are like at the same personality and level I am, which is great. Like I immediately bonded with these people, having only talked to them with 5 minutes. And then as soon as I got the position and I started working on the game, I told myself like, okay, this is what I want to do for the rest of my like life. Like this is great, because not just because I got to play video games all day, but because mm-hmm. I loved the process. I loved the production, the development pipeline, all that stuff, and how it worked. I even loved watching them convert my bugs from English to Japanese so that the developers could actually fix them. Like, I thought that was really cool. And so, yeah, from there, man, like, I think that's how I kind of launched myself into gaming. And then, yeah, ever since then, it's been all about gaming.
Okay, wow. So there's so much there. I love it. So theater was your passion. So... And you said Virginia was where you kind of grew up, yeah. Yep. So were you gaming at the same time? As that was gaming a passion, or was theater and the filmmaking dominating your time?
I think like gaming has always been a part of my life. Like I remember my first memory of gaming, period, was my brother and my dad playing Dracula on the Super Nintendo in like 93, 94, and they couldn't get past the first part. And I remember my dad getting frustrated about that, but then like just watching it, I was like, oh, this is cool. And then from there, it went from like, my dad was a huge Link to the Past fan, love Link to the Past, so I watched him play that religiously. And then we ended up getting a Nintendo 64 eventually, and I think that might be like kind of the moment in my life where I really became a fan of video games, because I never thought about it like outside of like, oh, my brother's playing it, cool. I never like, you know, said to myself, I want to play a video game, so I was too young. But then I remember the day like I came home from school or something, I went into our little playroom, whatever it was, and my brother was doing something on TV, but I wasn't really paying attention. And then he just automatically saw that like, I wasn't paying attention, and just said like, dude, we got a Nintendo 64. And like I snapped over and looked, and he's playing Turok 64, and I'm like, oh my god, this is amazing, you know, 3D, cool, like all that. I'm like, oh my god, what is this? And like from that, I was enthralled with video games. And then we got, was it Ocarina of Time? And my dad absolutely loved Ocarina of Time, and I loved watching him play. And I think my love for video games really started, and has even blossomed to now about like just sitting down and watching other people play the game. I don't know what it is. Like, I love watching my brother play Metal Gear Solid. I love watching my dad play Zelda. It's like how I became kind of really enthralled with video games. And I don't think it was until the PlayStation 2 era with, I think the first two games we got were Kinetica and Madden 2002, where I really got into playing and started understanding like, oh, I can actually do this. And then from there, I played throughout high school, probably, or middle school and high school, probably a little too much. Like my grades started to suffer because I was playing so many games, and that's all where my focus went. And then once I got to college, I took a break from video games for about 3 years. Like I maybe it's 2 years. I remember getting Modern Warfare 3, the original, at like the midnight release, playing it. And I just told myself, like, after playing that game, I don't want to do this anymore. Not knocking the game. It just was like, I need to focus on school. I need to focus on film. I can't do this anymore type of deal. Because I think I spent 24 hours total playing through that entire game and replaying it. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. So I took a break from games. And it wasn't until I was working at the theater and I got a PlayStation 4 that I kind of fell back in love with it because I loved kind of like the concept of streaming. Because something I've always done, like I said, is watching people play video games. And that's exactly what Twitch is, or used to be. Mm-hmm. Like, you watch people play video games. That is amazing. That is awesome. And so I told myself, I would love people to watch me play video games. So I got a PS4 to try to stream and do all that stuff. And so, yeah, like, I was playing video games religiously, like middle school to high school. But then once I hit college and kind of after that, it kind of seldom kind of deteriorated, just simply because I got busy. I was focused on other things in life. And then once I started streaming on Twitch, like, yeah, I built a community. I had friends that I played with, you know, but it wasn't like a religious thing at all. And then I think once I started like getting back into games, once I got to California, that's when I like really started picking it up again. And then actually Battlefield 1, I think, is the game, which I believe you worked on, right, Alex?
Correct? Battlefield 1, yep, yeah. I did, yep. Mm-hmm.
That's the game that kind of reunited my brother and I, because we you know, he'd been living on the West Coast ever since I was, like, in high school, because he's now a first mate on a dredge ship off the West Coast. Mm. And it was really that game that kind of brought me back to the camaraderie you can build within video games. And where, our relationship kind of blossomed again. And so that game will forever be my favorite multiplayer game of all time. Not because of, like, of course, my brother, but also it's a great freaking game. If you haven't played Battlefield 1, it's up there. It's incredible.
Yeah, I agree. And not just because I worked on it. It's a really good game. So you got a brother who games. Do you have any other siblings or just a brother?
I do. I have a sister as well. She's not a big gamer. She's much older than I am, so she actually became a pilot, an airline pilot, when I was pretty young. So she was, you know, all around the world, so I didn't get to see her too much. But anytime she was home, she wasn't really a big gamer, but she always liked watching my dad and my brother play, and myself play as well.
Okay, so you both kind of watch your brother and your dad play.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. Okay, and so So there was a point where video games and the sort of film and theater side of your life clashed. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like maybe in those earlier days, they sort of were equal partners, maybe, right? That you were sort of enjoying the sort of theatrical side, that part of your life, and also video games at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Were they kind of your main passions?
Yeah, it comes back to, like, I just... At the end of the day, I just want to entertain people, however that may be. Like, I said, from a young age, I just wanted to be in the entertainment industry. I wanted to make things or write things or be a part of projects that, you know, just made people feel real emotions, real passions, you know, have them become fans of something like I became a fan of something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am a huge Metal Gear Solid fan. Not only because it was one of my favorite games to watch my brother play, and it's also one of my favorite, you know, series to play right now, but it had such an impact on my life that I think I said to myself, I'm like, that's the kind of stuff I want to make. It doesn't necessarily have to be video games, but I want to make things that have such a heavy impact. It's like the first time you see your favorite movie. Like, I wanted to make somebody's favorite type of deal. Not for the clout, but simply for me wanting to give something back to somebody, to make somebody's day, to make somebody's world better. Like, that's kind of been my thing. And I've bounced around between industries, but I've always had the focus of, like, I'm doing this with a passion, not because I don't have a direction, but more so I have a lot to give, and I like to consider myself a jack of all trades in some fashion. So it's like, if my best foot forward is in games right now, great. If at some point I go back to theater and I get a gig on working on Broadway, which probably won't happen since I'm so out of experience, but if it ever did, like, I would put my same amount of passion I put into my work now into that.
Right, interesting. So this desire to kind of inspire people, and, you know, in the same way that you were inspired by watching people play.
Yeah, just I mean, just watching movies and watching people play and, you know, listening to music, just like trying to figure out why I was being so inspired by something and how I can do that to somebody else as well with something I'm making.
Got it. And then you mentioned that, you know, kind of lighting and you know, kind of setup almost became something in theater and film that you really loved, almost like the, you know, the behind the scenes part of it really drew you, as opposed to the performing part, right?
Right. It's... like I got goosebumps at the end of every theater performance I ever ran, because while I was working in theater, specifically for the Dinner Theater in Fredericksburg, Virginia, I was one of the main techs, backstage stagehands, and like, you know, we were running sets, we were, you know, doing scene changes, running flies, helping with, you know, costume changes and all of that stuff. But it was like a bit of an adrenaline rush, because not only like, yeah, the actors are performing on stage, but you also are performing as a stagehand, because mm-hmm. you have a part in that show.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so I would get goosebumps at the end of every night when people would start applauding and all the actors are out doing their first bows. But like, I know a piece of that applause is for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is why I did it, because we just made somebody's night
mm-hmm.
wonderful. Like, that's why we do this. And yeah, like it was I've never wanted to be like the forefront of attention type mm-hmm. of thing. And so I think I very much veered towards like the backstage, like the behind the scenes ordeal, because I find it interesting. I like seeing how things, you know, get put together. I've always loved, you know, puzzles and Legos, but because not because of the finished product, but how you get to that finished product type of deal. And,
yeah.
You know, really pushing myself and challenging myself to, you know, do these things, and then, you know, that sometimes people look at and say, oh, that looks cool, but then, you know, there's 500 man hours that went into making that thing, and somebody just passes it by and says it looks cool. Right. I want to celebrate the 500 man hours that went into it instead of the final product, even though the final product's also great, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I think the process and the journey of getting there is what's really, really amazing.
Got it. And it sounds very much like a desire to kind of, this is the wrong word, but kind of enable other people to be successful as well, right?
Yeah.
There seems to be a part of it that is about, you know, my contribution helps these folks do yes. their job better, be better, you know, at what they're doing.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, because like looking at your career, like you said, you know, a number of performing arts and theatrical areas that, you know, you mentioned, kind of writing, Theatre Unleashed, and you know, various writing roles. And you mentioned Full Sail as well as somewhere mm-hmm. you went. And obviously Full Sail is quite well known for its video game courses. Was there any overlap there? Did you see any, or were you very focused on the performing arts?
I had, what was it? It was a very accelerated program. It was a year program where each month was a different subject. One of them was video game writing, and or writing for video games, and we had to make our own game on Twine, you know, text-based adventure,
yep.
which I really loved doing. I thought it was great because I had a very much a branching storyline. Mm-hmm. That, like, some people just did linear. I was like, no, forget that. I'm going branching and trying all that, like challenging myself, trying
yep.
to figure out. And I loved doing that. But my main reason, this is going to sound funny, but my main reason for going to Full Sail was because back then my goal was to write for World Wrestling Entertainment.
Mm.
I've always been a huge wrestling fan, and mm-hmm. I loved the opportunities for storytelling there, because not so much during 2012 to 15, like the stories were okay, but like before then, like some of the storylines were incredible, and then even some of the storylines now are incredible as well. And I wanted to do that, and one of my teachers was actually like the lead writer during the Attitude Era and all that, did like the Undertaker, Prince of Darkness, all, you know, all that stuff. Like his first night was the night Mankind got thrown off the Hell in the Cell by Undertaker. So like as soon as I learned that he was my teacher, one of my teachers, I just confided in him and wanted to understand what I got to do to make it into the business, because Full Sail is the home of WWE's developmental branch, the NXT. And mm-hmm. so a lot of the students, like the film students there, also run the productions for the filming of for the weekly shows. And I wanted to kind of use that to kind of like elevate myself and get my foot in the right door. But my teacher kind of told me, it's like, if you want to make it as a writer, you got to have like TV credits. And if you want TV credits, you got to go to Hollywood and do that whole gig. So that was my plan moving out to Los Angeles, was trying to build my credits so I could eventually go to the WWE.
Got it. Interesting. And what was it about WWE that kind of drew you? There's a huge theatrical element to WWE. So I presume, like you mentioned, the stories, right? Just the
It was mainly just, you know, the opportunities for storytelling. I mean, the mm-hmm. stage is a very powerful setting for storytelling. And I thought, you know, what's better than being able to tell a story and then just have two people like duke it out, or four people duke it out as a part of that story. I mean, there's fights and action and stories and movies all the time, mm-hmm. but doing that on a live stage setting, like it's incredible. So it really drew me because I saw a lot of opportunity there, and that's just kind of where my creative juices were flowing towards at the time. Huh. And yeah, like I said, if it wasn't for me getting into games, I probably still would be in LA trying to make it, trying to write for the WWE.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I could. Yeah. It sounds like a at one point it was a real passion, a real destination for you. Yeah. So let's go back a little bit to the point where, so you move out to LA. Mm-hmm. You're trying to find your place there, and then you mentioned you kind of almost stumbled on the QA role.
Yeah, I was just looking for a legit job. Like, I liked my internship where I was reading scripts and providing coverage on these scripts and, you know, getting into the nitty gritty of how a film production company works in LA.
Mm.
Super cool. You know, a lot of cutthroatness though, you know, that type of deal. But yeah, I just needed a job. Like, I needed money, honestly, to stay. And I didn't want to go back to the children's theater I was working for because I felt like I did everything I needed to do there personally. I mean, I could have if I wanted to, but I wanted to kind of brand my expand my horizons a little bit. And so I just started looking, and I remember every time I drove out to like LAX or pick somebody up from LAX, like Square Enix's office is right there next to LAX. And I was always seeing it, and I'm like, man, Square Enix, like, I remember playing or watching my brother play Final Fantasy VII and then us playing Final Fantasy X together and all that stuff. So it just dawned on me that, like, let me just check to see if they have something. And I looked it up, and they had a QA contract position open. I applied to it, and it's one of those situations, like I said, where games were always kind of that untouchable force that I don't think I would ever do. And then I got the email from the hiring agency saying, like, hey, they want you to come in and do their interview process and all that stuff. I was like, oh, cool, this sounds fun. And then, like I said, when I walked through the front doors and kind of went in there, I was like, yeah, this feels like home. It might not be like Square Enix might not be my home, but yeah, like the gaming industry feels like home.
Got it. And so, yeah, so that was the thing I was gonna scratch at is you also mentioned that you sort of games felt untouchable, right? Something that you never felt. So they were clearly a passion for you throughout all this time, but they were sort of something that you just had no concept. So at no point did you think, I can make games. I just enjoy consuming them and watching them. And
Right. Yeah. I think it comes down to, like, from what was available for a kid like me, growing up in the 90s and early 2000s, like, there were documentaries galore about how this band made this album.
Yep.
How Martin Scorsese made Raging Bull. You know what I mean? Like, there was just countless documentaries about how this was made. And I'm like, you know, I would watch those and say, like, oh, these are actual humans doing these things. I got to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But for games, like, the internet was very much in its infancy.
Mm-hmm.
So anything you did see was either very hard to find, but then there was no, like, theatrical documentary releases on any kind of gaming. Or if there was, I wasn't seeing them.
Yeah.
Because that's not what HBO was premiering on Saturday night type of deal. So it was more of an untouchable thing because I didn't understand how a video game came together. I didn't know what it was all about. I didn't know what programming was. I didn't know what art design was. I didn't know how multiple people created this one character, put it in the game, made it move, made it do all these functions with all these systems, all of that stuff. No idea. And so it was more of a, I think it's untouchable because I just don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And if my younger self, if I could go back to my younger self, I would have convinced myself to at least read a book about how it's done, because then I would have known. But like I said, my passion, my focus was on, like, filmmaking and getting into that part of the entertainment industry and then getting into theater and all that stuff.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense to me that this desire that you had to entertain, in many ways, filmmaking is a much more, especially at that time, was a much more accessible thing. Right? You could literally pick up a camera and make a short film or a film, you know, fairly easily. And even though there were maybe mappy programs, you know, Doom and Quake and some of those things, there was modding tools, right? But that's a level of complexity and a level of obscurity that is, you know, much not as immediate, I guess, as filmmaking.
Yeah, like games were very much a hobby. Like, you know, I had some PC games, like the one I played religiously with my friends was Soldiers of Fortune 2 back in the day. And, you know, but they were just a hobby. Yep. You know, it's something I went home and I played with my friends on, you know, played Guild Wars, played World of Warcraft. But, you know, they were just a hobby. You know, there was something I don't think I could make something like this. And then it's one of those things, like, in my very adolescent mind, it's like, are these things even made? Like, I couldn't even put two and two to how these things are made. I can see how
just a peer.
Like, if I watch a movie, like, I can see, like, oh, I see where the camera's set up and, like, you know, this is where they set action and this is where they set cut type of deal. But then, like, when you look at how play a video game back then, it's like, I don't even know where to start. How this is put together.
Mm-hmm.
How do you even, like, you know, create the base world, like, all of that stuff. So I think my like I said, my adolescent mind just kind of blocked it out and just said, just play it as a hobby, just do that and just be happy type of deal.
Yeah, very opaque, you know, and very 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 difficult to, you know, to understand for sure. So you mentioned when you sort of walked in the door of Square Enix and you kind of met the people, you kind of felt like you were home. Mm-hmm. How do you correlate that? Like, what were the similarities that you saw? You kind of mentioned personality maybe as one of them. Like, what were the overlap?
I think everybody just had a passion. Like, it's a different kind of passion. You walk in and everybody genuinely seemed happy where they worked. Hmm. Like, that was another thing. Like, I've heard the horror stories about game development and crunch time and all that stuff, but, like, when I walked in, I saw people happy, and I don't remember ever a time in my professional career, like, outside of entertainment, you know, when I was working first time gigs at, like, a furniture warehouse, moving furniture, or a movie theater, I don't remember a time walking in and everybody was just happy to be there. And when I walked in, the receptionist was happy. The people interviewing me were happy. And then once I got the job, everybody I interacted with was just happy because they were working on something they truly loved, they were passionate about, and it wasn't just about the money either. You know, when you work on film sets or work with, you know, other places, like, there's always just this lingering thing about money just kind of in the background. So people are, you know, people need jobs, people need to support themselves, of course. But then passion can, you know, you can lose your passion but still do a job, but then you just won't be very happy about it because you lost your passion. It's not about the money. So that's what I really liked about it, was that the people were just genuinely happy and were just, you know, interesting people as well, coming from all sorts of different backgrounds, some that went to school for game design, or people that were just like me who had a hodgepodge of different things in the industry, in entertainment industry, and then just fell into games type of deal.
Yeah, and I'm guessing for you, you know, personally, not having had any aspirations to make games, but knowing the power that they have to entertain, I can imagine there was an instant like, wait, these are people like me doing the thing that I love to do, in an industry that I love to be, you know, I love.
Right. And honestly, to this day, I don't understand why, like, as my young self, I didn't put the two and two together about, like, the amount of emotional kind of resonance a movie can happen the same way in video games, because I was obviously inspired by games throughout my life, but I think I fully looked at them as a hobby, so I didn't take the inspiration the same way. But, like, you know, being able to inspire people, being able to hit people with different emotions in video games is 100% obviously one of the best things about video games across the board, and making video games. And I don't know why my young mind didn't connect those two and say, hey, what you're trying to do in movies, you can also do in video games too, dude. Like, you know, it's kind of the same thing.
It is, but I think your point about how, you know, the opaqueness of one industry versus the other sort of made that seem less attainable, you know, the video game side less attainable. And maybe that, you know, I'm maybe reaching here, but that moment when you walked into Square Enix and kind of got a role there, you were like, oh, it can happen. It does. Now I understand it. And now immediately it all clicks. And I think it's fascinating that You're absolutely right. Right, you can get people that are just there for the money. You went there because you needed money.
I did.
But you immediately found your calling, almost. Right, you found, oh, this is where I'm meant to be, kind of thing.
Right. It was very much one of those things where I needed the money because I still had other focuses. I had other. Yep. I needed to continue writing and trying to get into Hollywood and all that stuff. So I needed the money. So I was very much getting into it for the money. But then, like I said, when I started working with the people there, the passion that came through,
I love that,
was just, it was incredible. And I think at that point as well, like all of my recollections about video games started coming back.
Yes.
Like why certain games were so impactful. I just didn't realize it. Like I said, Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
I think I actually wrote an essay on why I to this day still think the Joker in Arkham Knight is like the best use of a villain in video games ever, because it's just, you have that history, you have the mechanic of it all. So like I said, like once I started working there, all of my recollections and understanding of video games have actually had a very big impact on my life. I just never knew it. I wasn't taking it that way. And then that made me say, like, okay, what's my favorite game of all time? What's this? What's that? Like, what have I played that I truly remember and was impactful and all that stuff? Because as soon as my passion for, or seeing everybody's passion for video games in that office, it ignited my own passion for video games and reminded me, I love it. It's an incredible art form. I should have been doing this much sooner. Damn it. Let's go.
But,
you know.
Yeah, but you found it. Yeah, right. And it sort of unlocked that thing in you. That's such a great story. So you were at Square for, you know, for a few months, and then you moved over to ESO, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I moved back east because I had met my now wife, and I wanted to be closer to her, but I, you know, very much told her, like, I'm moving back, but I need to do games. I need to be in games. I have to do this. So I was in the Northern Virginia area, so the closest studios were Bethesda, and I wasn't even looking at ZOS. I just saw on Bethesda's website, they have, you know, all the studios, or sorry, ZeniMax's website, they have all the studios under the ZeniMax umbrella, and I saw a QA contract role for ZeniMax, and I applied. And I had to go through the interview process, and I remember I didn't hear anything back. And I think to make money, I was working at a movie theater at the time. And my my now wife told me, like, hey, you should call. If you haven't gotten a call back in a week, you should call them. And I was like, yeah, you're right. So I called the recruiter. Don't remember his name, but I called the recruiter and basically told me, hey, it's between you and someone else. So do you have any references? And I was like, oh, yes, I do. And I gave him references and I ended up getting the job. So that was really cool. But the crazy thing about it was I lived in Manassas, Virginia. The offices of ZeniMax Online Studios is in Hunt Valley, Maryland. And that is a good, without traffic, hour and a half, 2 hour drive. So in order for me to make it there by 9 a.m. every morning, I had to leave at 6. And I was stuck in traffic for 3.5 hours, and then 3.5 hours back. Every day until COVID hit. So like I said, my passion was ignited, and we didn't consider moving closer to Maryland or anything like that, simply just tax purposes and all that stuff. But like I was driven. Like, I wanted to do this. I dedicated myself to doing this. And I actually lost a car doing this. I got into an accident and totaled my car. So I got a new car during the whole process and continued to make the trip because I loved gaming. But then I especially love ZOS so much and what we were doing that. So that's a little tidbit about kind of what passion actually does to a person.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah. Yeah, as someone that had an epically long commute, you know, in LA, I can sympathize. Yeah, like it's a lot of time in the car, but the job is worth it, you know.
Absolutely.
So you started this contract and then you went full time.
Yep.
On ESO, and so you stayed in QA, you know, for for a couple of years, you know, a few years working your way up to lead.
Yep.
Around sort of January 23, you kind of transitioned into a technical producer.
Yep.
Talk to me about that transition. Like, how did that happen?
Sure.
You know.
Well, going back to like my time on ESO, I was mainly on the Dungeons, Arenas, and Trials team. So one of the things, like, I had to get very good at the game. I had to be like a player wise because we balanced the content for the Dungeons, Arenas, and Trials, and they wanted to balance these to like the 1%, or sorry, at least the hardest difficulty level. They wanted to balance these to the 1% players because that's mm-hmm. that was a big draw for those players. So I had to get very good at the game. So I not only got very good at the game, I fell in love with the game, not only because I was working on it, but because it's a fantastic game, but it also allowed me to start studying how the game was made. Because in QA, at least on ESO, we had the opportunity to kind of sometimes use the tools that developers were using to kind of make our own like little test things, just to test out the tools and the pipeline in general overall. And I loved kind of setting up my own person and spawners and effects and all that stuff. I thought that was really cool. And so when I moved over to the unannounced MMO project, we were kind of the first wave of QA on that team. A lot of the testing wasn't for content anymore. I was strictly used to just testing dungeons, arenas, and trials, and doing some art passes for the content team and all that stuff. I wasn't used to testing like tools and how, like, full-on testing tools, not just using them real quick to make sure the pipeline works and the system works and submission works, but, you know, testing how to break a tool that people are using, how these tools are put together, how the assets are managed, how things are submitted, how are they making it into the game and the nightly builds, like all that stuff I had to learn. And so I very much started generating a passion for kind of technical game development, more of that, like we said earlier, the behind the scenes stuff.
Yep.
Understanding, like, it's cool. Like, I love seeing an artist and a tech artist, like, you know, model and rig a character and bringing it to life, but what really interests me is how they get to that point. How are they able to rig? And you can just say, oh, they're just working in Unity or they're working in Unreal. Yeah, but it's more complicated than that, because what a lot of people don't know about game development is, like, yeah, you can use these engines, but a lot of the times the teams working with these engines are creating their own custom toolings and workflows to make their game. And what is that they're doing? How does that work? And so built a passion for that. So I had to know the tools really well. And I think at some point I kind of became the designated kind of support specialist, because we had so many new people joining the team that needed to know how to use these workflows. And I was like the only, like, not the only one, but one that was available the majority of the time, because a lot of engineers were heads down on other stuff, that I could help people start understanding how these tools and things work. And I think I showed that I could handle those kinds of, not only those requests, but those kinds of items when it comes to game development. And so I got tapped on the shoulder about a technical producer position, and I was kind of told, like, I should try applying. And I did. But it wasn't the cakewalk. Sure, it was, you know, I was in being hired from internal, but I had to go through the whole interview process, and, you know, I flubbed up quite a bit, and I had to figure things out, and I had to really prove myself during those interviews. So, but yeah, eventually I moved into the technical production role, and then my entire world changed, Alex, because now I was on a different, completely different side of game development.
Yeah, that's sort of why I was digging at it, because the QA side that inspired your passion, right, or reignited your passion for games, and, you know, there's a correlation there, I think, between being an integral part in making sure that the entertainment that players get is robust and fun, they're getting the best experience, which to me kind of correlates with who you are as a person, I think. But then the technical production, you kind of mentioned it, right? I think getting into that more back room behind the scenes stuff is a different world. You know, you're serving a different audience to start with. Yep. I mean, indirectly you're serving the player, but more directly you're serving the team itself.
Yep.
How do you think that experience, that role, connected with you and your passions?
I think it came back to the same feeling I had when I was doing like technical theater, where I knew what I did enabled the people that put the product together, put the game together and theater the show together. And being able to be a part of the process in that way was like, you know, I very much felt like, I found a lot of encouragement come from the fact that I was helping others do what they wanted to do. And that was very rewarding, overall. And just simply like from the technical side of game development, you literally build things from scratch, which is great. And I love kind of bringing things into existence like that. And so I think that's what really ignited my passion on that front, was like, okay, we have a problem. We got to build a solution, and we literally need to sit in a room and whiteboard this out and figure it out. But it's the same thing for, you know, if you're doing a new encounter or a new boss fight or coming up with a new armor set, you're whiteboarding it out. It's just, I preferred being on the technical side of it because I was like, okay, we got to do this so that all these other people can do that. Mm. You know, there is no game without kind of like the technical side of it.
Yep.
And I kind of like that. But at the same time, there's no game without designers. There's no game without tech artists. There's no game without animation. So I liked fitting into that role within the puzzle.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think correlates a lot with who you are as a person. I think, you know, like you said, that role is, you know, I remember from my time, you know, working with you, that's such an important role.
Yeah.
That involves, you know, trying to make people's experience the best it can be, you know, but constantly under the pressure of not always where it needs to be, especially on, you know, a tool set that, as we were, you know, kind of building a tool set from scratch.
Yeah,
a lot to do there. Okay, so I'm, you know, obviously you went from associate to technical, you know, full technical producer, and you know, there was a time, you know, on the project where you were the face, you know, in many ways you were kind of the face of that interface between developer, you know, internal developer and tools people, also internal, but you know, they are sort of two sides of the same coin. And knowing who you are now and knowing your origin, you know, which I didn't know until now, it makes so much sense how good you were at that, right? You know, because there's a part of the role there that you did so well, which was being the face of the tools, being the face of, hey, you know, person struggling in the tools to get something to happen. I'm here to help make your life better. Tell me what your problem is. You were really good at that. And it makes a lot of sense to me that, you know, your theatrical background, your kind of that background that you have of kind of wanting people to have the best experience kind of seems to overlap really well. Made you excel at that, I think.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting now that I think back on it. Like it's almost like I was kind of destined to go this path. You know, we always talk about fate, and like some people have it figured out from a T. Like they know exactly what they want to do, and I thought that was me, and I kept bouncing around. But I always knew, like I said, I want to be in the entertainment industry.
Yep.
But then after getting into technical production and truly understanding what it is to be a producer in game development overall, like it was easy for me to kind of harken back to all my experiences and just say, I've always been kind of meant to do this. I've already been doing this just in a lot of different ways. So all those skills I generated from, you know, TV production in high school, to theater in high school, to filmmaking and theater in college, to making a short film in Cannes, at the Cannes Film Festival, which I was actually a producer on, which is kind of funny. And then, you know, going into back to theater, getting into writing, all that stuff, like all that skill set kind of like allowed me to prepare myself for this. And I wasn't even knowing I was preparing myself for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, just as you were talking, like, you know, coming up with stuff from scratch, right? The writing part that you did, you know, there's an element of that, right? You know, just trying to manifest it out of nothing. I'm sure the productions that you did, there was a lot of high pressure, right? There were a lot of times where, you know, stuff was on the line and you had to be calm and cool and, you know, organize, you know, and then obviously the technical side, being kind of someone that was attuned to the more technical elements and being able to pick them up and understand them. You know, even to the fact that, you know, clearly you're a gamer and capable of hitting very high levels in games, right? Not everyone's capable of that. Not everyone has the mechanical skill, and, you know, you clearly did. So, yeah, like you say, it feels like there was a lot of overlap with who you were as, you know, what you'd learned up to that point that really came to the fore. And, you know, it's very much how I felt about my role at ZOS as well. It sort of felt like it was the best version of me.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, and that's something to call out about ZOS in general, is I feel like it brought out the best versions of people and their skills and their careers. across the board, because we truly were doing some incredible things there. Yeah, I just want to shout out to Zoss about all that.
Hear, hear. And I think that's something that gamers, right, who are so focused on the end product,
yes,
maybe don't correlate. You know, like you were saying, right, there was a period where video game production of video games was so opaque. I think it's better now, but it's still quite opaque. Mm-hmm. That there is this human element of the team's success and the team's capability and the studio's atmosphere, and you know, that can have such an impact on that output. Mm-hmm. And it's so invisible, right? Because you're just staring at the end products and going, this game sucks or this game's great.
Yeah.
Right? But there's that human element of the people coming together that makes such a difference.
Yeah. And while there are some games that get released that I feel like are pushed out way too soon for a variety of reasons that I'm not going to know, I full well know that 9 times out of 10, that project had a lot of love, blood, sweat, and tears put into it by a whole bunch of people. And, you know, I sympathize with every single person that is in game development, actively working in it, that can call themselves a game developer, because it is not easy at all. And and I get a little irked anytime I see, like, you know, the initial ratings come out of a game and you got people just kind of already giving scathing reviews of the game because the game isn't like the original or isn't like the sequel. And I'm like, but, you know, let's focus on what it does really well, and the fact mm-hmm. that it was made, first of all, and pushed out as a AAA title. That in and of itself is a feat, and it's why a whole bunch of recruiters want to look at your ship titles to see what you did. Like, that's the reason it's there, because they know it's not easy, and they need that experience overall.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that dovetails into my next question, which was how has being in the industry affected the way you play and consume games? Oof.
Oh, man. I definitely notice a lot more, especially being in QA when you're looking for bugs constantly. You find bugs really easily. I mean, I always found bugs in games, but, you know, escaping the world is a lot easier now for me than it was originally. But, you know, I can kind of tell, you know, you can tell when, you know, where a trigger volume is for something now because you understand what it is. You know, growing up, it was always like, man, why does this cutscene always start right after this door? That seems really odd. And now mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, well, I know exactly why that happens and how it works type of deal. But as a gamer myself, I think back in the day, like, I tried to rush through stuff too much. Like, I tried to be, for example, I tried to play the very first Halo and just get through it and didn't really take the time I needed to really absorb everything about it, absorb the story, absorb the characters, absorb everything. I just wanted to beat it to say, hey, I beat this game. Same for like the original Grand Theft Autos and all that stuff. And then I think when I played the original Mafia, which is my favorite game, I was really young, but it was like that inkling of that moment where I realized, man, I should play games slower, because with Mafia, if you rushed, you got in trouble. Because in that game, there were speed limits. There was gas in the car. There was an actual story that was really beefy and you needed to sink your teeth into type of deal. And so now that I've kind of worked in games, I take my time through things. I don't like to stress when I play games anymore, unless it's a From Software title, because the stress just comes regardless. But I used to be all about beating games on the hardest difficulty and just not having a great time. Now I play games on like the easiest difficulty, unless it's something like the Resident Evil remakes, where the Inferno mode completely changes the game and how it's played and where the enemies spawn and stuff like that. Like, that's super cool. But then, like, I always play a game on easy when I first started, because I just want to absorb every single thing about it to just not only make myself better as a developer and an entertainer, but just to truly, like, celebrate what these people did and what they put together. Because I can look on IGN and see, oh, a game got a 5, but then, you know, I play it and it's like, you know, I think it's an incredible game. I see why it got a 5, but there was a lot of hard work that went into this type of deal.
Yeah, so sort of broader appreciation for not only the technology but also the effort.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned before, right, the hours of the journey less than the destination, right, being kind of drawn to understanding that more now that you've worked in games. And I'm curious, I mean, you mentioned, you know, loving ESO and having to get really good at ESO. Are MMOs kind of a passion for you, or is it, you know, is that something you normally play?
Not really. Like, I played Guild Wars 1 was my very
first. Oh, yeah,
first,
you mentioned Guild Wars. Yeah.
My very first MMO. And that was, I saw the game in Walmart when I was like, I don't know, 10, 11. And I was like, this looks cool because I like the armor the guy was wearing on the front. I thought it was super cool. I want to play this. Didn't know what the heck an MMO was. And then I realized, oh, I'm playing with other people all at the same time. Like, this is really cool. And to this day, the best guild I was ever a part of was on Guild Wars. Like, I forgot what the guild name was, but they were the most incredible people I've met on a game. And that guild transitioned over to World of Warcraft. And so then I sunk my teeth into World of Warcraft. But then as soon as I hit 60, I quit because that grind is ridiculous. The original, if you go play vanilla WoW, you do that grind to 60 without bots. Like, it's insane. And I think everybody should do it because I think it's a rite of passage for people in gaming to do the original grind. But from there, I think I played Guild Wars 2 for a little bit. But then after that, it really wasn't a passion. And I remember talking in my interview for getting into ZOS. They asked me, like, you know, do you play MMOs? And I told them straight up, like, I used to raid in WoW. I haven't. I've never touched ESO. I've watched a couple streamers play ESO. I think it looks cool. And I would really like to work on it type of deal. But I was straight up honest with them because I wasn't going to lie to them, of course. And then, yeah, once I got the job and started playing ESO, there was a, you know, I think MMOs are an incredible genre. They're not my go-to for a lot of things, but ESO, I just developed such a love for it because of, I guess, you know, I got really good at it, but then just how rich that game actually is. Like, there, you can pump 1,000 hours into that game and still have 3,000 hours left to do. Like, there's so much content in that game, and I know some people just run dungeons or just run trials or just do overland content, just do PvP, but, like, you do all of that together, it's so rich and vast. And I think that's what I really loved about it, because it's such an incredible product that there's endless things you can do in that game, and it's all fulfilling. Like, it's all fleshed out stories with all voice acting. And I think what bugged me about World of Warcraft back in the day, I think they do it now, but World of Warcraft back in the day, it's like, it's all reading. Like, when you get a quest, you're reading it, and there's no, you know, quest markers telling you where to go, which I still like. I like reading something and trying to figure out what I need to do. But I think the fact that almost every quest in ESO has full voice acting throughout is incredible. Because that's incredible writing, that's incredible voice acting direction, those are incredible voice actors, because it's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm curious, you know, you mentioned, so there's a couple of MMOs, you mentioned sort of playing Battlefield 1 with your brother. Mm-hmm. Are you more of a multiplayer gamer or a single player gamer?
I'm more of a single player gamer. I love multiplayer games, don't get me wrong. Like, yeah. I was there for the original Destiny. I pre-ordered Destiny. I was there for, I think I went through until Rise of Iron. I think that was my last expansion, so I was there for quite a bit. Played a lot of Halo 2 online, but it was, multiplayer's always been about hanging out with my friends. It's never been about being competitive. I tried doing MLG Pro things on Halo and immediately stopped because I saw I'm not good enough for it, so I wasn't going to kid myself. But no, I am more of a single player narrative driven gamer. Something I really love to do is kind of play with simulation within games. So, like, in sports games or in wrestling games, setting up, like, CPU for CPU matches and playing with sliders and playing with values on different stats just to see, like, what the outcome is and try to get the most realistic kind of outcome as I can, or, you know, experience as I can. Because at the end of the day, I've always loved watching people play video games. And if I can, like, you know, as I'm working on something, like, pop a game on and just, like, have it playing in the background type of thing, of, like, something I set up, I can just kind of see what the results are. I find that really interesting. I also really like you know, the interactive story games, like Telltale games, as well as Supermassive games. I think when Until Dawn came out, I think I played that game so much, and I speed ran it. Like, I think I could beat it in, like, under 4 hours or something like that. But, like, I played that game so much because it was so damn good. And, like, after playing, like, Walking Dead, the first Walking Dead game, and living through the having to wait 2 months per episode to play through that, I was like, oh my god, this is such an incredible like genre of video game. And then Until Dawn came out, and I said, okay, this just blew the roof off everything, because this is gonna change the map. And I think what Supermassive has done since then has been really great. And so what I really like about those now is that they have the director's mode, so you can literally set what like how the character's at and then hit play, and it plays out the whole game for you. Like, I think that's great.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see that those types of gamers are thought of, because I know we're kind of few and far between. But yeah, simulation stuff is really kind of my bread and butter. It's what I mainly did on my Twitch channel. Mm. So it's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. And again, it goes right back to you know watching your brother and your dad play. And
yep.
Yeah. So as you start to wind this down, just a couple of questions. How did your family relate to your video game profession, your gaming?
My parents, or my family, has always been super supportive, but they were military. Like both my parents were Navy dentists, so they were, you know, up at 4:30 every day, come home at 4 every day, like, you know, rinse and repeat everything. But they were always super supportive and wanted me to kind of go for my dreams type of deal. But you know, they were also very realistic. You know, they're saying like, you can do this, but you need to be able to support yourself. You need to be able to cook for yourself. You need to be able to do all these things for myself. So I was raised very well in that aspect. And but I mean, like I said, my dad and my brother were big gamers. My mom's not really a gamer, but she tried playing Link to the Past once and didn't get out of the castle. She just turned it off and said, I can't do this. I don't want to be chased type of thing. But you know, they always loved the fact that, especially when I started working at ZOS, or no, frankly, when Dissidia launched and I sent them a screenshot of my name in the credits type of thing, like that I think they were like super proud of me of that. So that was really cool. But they've always been super supportive. They don't really know what I do and what goes into it. And I don't reveal too much at all, but I, you know, anytime an expansion was coming out for ESO, I would show them the trailer just to say like, this is what I'm working on type of deal. And then my brother, he's really into music. He's a phenomenal guitar player. He's in a couple bands in the Portland, Oregon area, but he mainly fell into the realm of shipping and driving ships and things like that. So that's what his real passion was. Right. But yeah, no, never any kind of animosity or anything towards what I do. It's more so they always wanted to make sure like what I'm doing, I love, but I'm also being able to support myself and I'm being realistic. I'm not, you know, trying to shoot for something I can't do and just kind of, you know, hitting myself in the head over and over until it doesn't make sense anymore type of deal where it's like, you know, I'm constantly having to move back with them because I had a failed endeavor type of deal. Like they wanted me to be realistic about everything. So it's also very much why I became an EMT, because I was like, I can do theater, but it ain't going to pay much first few years, so I got to have something in my back pocket. Luckily, the job I did land, I was able to support myself. So, but that isn't always the case, and you just have to kind of be realistic about things.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm curious, just one quick aside related to that.
Yeah,
you mentioned moving to LA, right? You know, the sort of the fantasy of moving to LA and trying to land a job in Hollywood. Did they relate to that more or less than I've got a job in video games, right? Did one of them scare them more? You know, was one of them, did one of them seem more risky than the other? Like,
me going to LA definitely scared them more, because that was like me leaving the nest.
Yeah.
Me going to LA and trying this thing, because like, my parents have been in the military for umpteen number of years. And then my mom became a government contractor. So the idea of moving somewhere without kind of a sure thing set up or something stable set up was really frightening for them. And then, you know, I'm moving from Northern Virginia to Skid Row, Los Angeles, also freaked them out quite a bit. So, yeah, it scared them, but they supported me. They had confidence in me. And I reassured them, like, I knew what I was doing. You know, I may not know where my next job is, but I know I'm passionate enough and talented enough to do whatever it is I need to do.
Yeah. And they obviously saw that in you and encouraged you. I love that. And so just final question. Which do you think defines you more, developer or gamer?
That is a tough question. Professionally, a developer, but casually I'm a gamer, I guess.
Right.
Best way to say it. Like, if I'm meeting new people and, like, you know, they say, like, you know, what do you do for fun type video? It's like, I'm a gamer, period. And then if they ask me, you know, what do you do for work? I was like, I develop video games. You know, I don't meet people and say, hey, I'm Matt Prunhofer. I'm a developer, you know, type of thing. You know, it's one of those, like, I try to keep my professional life separated from my personal life as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But there's no denying that one of my favorite hobbies is also what I do professionally. Mm-hmm. So I always have that connection. So I think I'm defined by both, honestly. But when it's 9 a.m. and I'm in my 9 to 5, I'm a developer. When it's when it's 5 or 6 o'clock, I'm a gamer type of deal.
Yeah, and I think that's a weird question to ask because it's a hard one to answer, I think. But I think it sounds like we're very similar that, you know, what we do as a job overlaps with who we are as, you know, what we do for fun and therefore who we are as a person. And I think your story, like so many of the stories that we've had on this podcast, is one where the passion that you had, maybe even in a different field, in your case it was, manifested itself in video games and then became, you know, the defining part of your career.
Yep.
And, you know, in your case, kind of unlocked this, like, video games are my passion. They're everything I want to do.
It was a flood. That light bulb that clicked, man. I just said, this is it. This is it. And took me a while to figure it out. But
but you got there.
Yeah, I got there.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes being a developer so interesting, right? Because it is a role that can so heavily bleed into you as a person. You know, what you do in and out of work can overlap so much. So, Matt, I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me on here, man.
It was great. And a fascinating story. I love, especially, you know, a story that kind of starts, you know, has this kind of unusual path to get here is so great. So thank you for taking the time, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.